back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. You know, they told me to stick to sports around here, and they weren't counting on the Ravens going away this early. We're expecting to get to the Super Bowl next month. I'm certainly hoping to do that, and Luke will be monitoring all things Ravens. But the real season for guys like Don Moeller and Baltimore Positive begin right now. Don, I'm wearing my Fadley shirt in the hopes that we can get the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery back out on the road. I want to have people like our next guest down in person. I want to do some alfresco in April and May, but it is the political season, and I ask you to let's focus on journalism, let's focus on Omicron and the end of this plague and economics, and let's talk about who our leaders are going to be. And this is where it gets fun for you, because you love polls, you love pollsters, you love where the money's flowing and which way the wind is blowing. And as we get into this, even the governor's getting asked if he's running for senator at this point. This is going to be a fun one, because I know how much you love pollsters.
Well, I do. I think they have their pulse on the voters of the state and voters of the nation. One of the best, longest and well-known pollsters in the state of Maryland, Patrick Gonzalez, the president of Gonzalez Research and Media Services, had a poll that came out just recently. Front page of the Baltimore Sun got my attention, Patrick, because there were some big numbers in there. So welcome back to Baltimore Positive.
Welcome back, guys. Welcome, guys. Thank you for having me.
Hey, Patrick, let's just jump right in, because I've got specific questions about the numbers in the poll. But you're always asked to top line things. What were the themes? What were your takeaways? If you're in an elevator with somebody and they've got 30 seconds with you and they say, hey, Patrick, I saw you had a new poll. What'd you learn? What did you learn this time?
Well, I really focused on two things, which was sort of the national. I wanted to look at Biden, and then the state. I wanted to look at Hogan. And I'd say the takeaway is Biden still is above water in Maryland, above water being above 50%. He's considerably behind the vote total he got at 65% in November of 2020. There are some signs of trouble. But he's still his national polls are sinking, but he's still hanging in there so far in Maryland. That's the takeaway there.
Patrick, I thought that was, you mentioned some things to be concerned about. That was a five alarm fire to me. Okay. When I looked at his Maryland number, that's not a good number for a Democrat.
Let me put it in perspective. Right. Maryland is essentially, and I'm going to keep the math simple, is essentially 2-1 Republican.
Right.
If Maryland was a state that was 40% Democrat, 40% Republican, 20% Independent, his disapproval, based on the numbers I got, would be 10 points higher than his approval. The only thing keeping him above 50 in Maryland is the huge registration advantage currently with Democrats, and the strong vote he's still getting with Democrats.
Is there an assumption that disapproval of Biden is approval of I would vote for Trump again? Because I think somewhere in there, I said to Don, no one that voted for Biden would suddenly switch to Trump at this point, especially after insurrections, unless you're really a dyed-in-the-wool Republican. And if you were, you didn't vote for Biden anyway. So part of it for me is, am I happy with Biden? No. Am I happy with the Democrats? No. Does that make me not one? Does that make me lean toward voting for, the election was stolen? No. But I'm not happy with Biden. And if you would ask me, am I in Biden approval land, I'd say no. But I voted for him, and I guess I would vote for him again because I wouldn't have another option, right, on that side of the ticket. But I think we've gotten red and blue on the presidential side sort of sorted out to some degree. Even Hogan wouldn't vote for Trump, right? He voted for Ronald Reagan.
Well, the question was originally, is disapproval for Biden a reference to someone else? And the answer to my thinking is no. It's, do you approve or disapprove of the job Joe Biden's doing? And the answer was 54% approve, but within that group, about 30% strongly approved and about 24% somewhat approved. So,
well, and Patrick, what I saw, and walk us through this, because I think your poll reflects what I've been reading in national polls. And Nestor's right. You know, I follow the Real Clear Politics polling averages, you know, three or four times a week. It looks to me like where Joe Biden has really cratered is among independents. Is that what you found as well?
That is the takeaway with Biden. Yes. 90% of Republicans disapprove. But of course, the problem with Joe Biden fundamentally is today 2-1. They're against Biden in Maryland. And I suspect based on the national polls, that's the same anywhere across the country.
How many people is that when we're talking about swinging an election like that in the favor of Larry Hogan in regard to or maybe the next Republican side of the ticket, Schultz, whoever it would be, would swing the ticket in that way?
Well, I would venture to guess, Nestor, that in 2018, Hogan got 90% of the Republicans, 30%, 25 to 30% of Democrats, 65 to 70% of independents, and that translated into, 53% of the vote. So,
now, I guess my question was appealing to independents. What does that mean? Percentage-wise in the state, is that 7%? What numbers is independent?
Independents about 20% of the electorate.
Really? Okay, fair enough.
But out of every 100... Yeah, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Patrick.
That's 20% that don't participate in primaries. The primaries. Right, exactly.
Right, correct. Okay. Correct.
And that's a smaller number here in Maryland than you find nationwide.
Nationwide. Right. The breakout nationwide is almost a third.
Right. I was going to say, it's about a third.
Is that a lot different than 40 years ago, Patrick? I mean, is that seems to me that you have a team, one or the other, that's a lot of people to say, I'm not really on a team. I don't feel like I meet that many people in the world that don't have a team, right? Or that are truly, and I have a handful of friends that I would really define them as maybe libertarian, you know, to some degree, because they probably lean more right than left if they're independent.
The question, is it more than it was 40 years ago? Absolutely. And here's how it kind of evolved. Once we started, and I'm going to speak specifically to Maryland, because you got to keep in mind, guys, not all 50 states. Very simple in Maryland. Maryland has party registration. You register as a Democrat, a Republican, or something else. A lot of states don't have party registration. But anyway, here in Maryland, I would guess that 30 years ago, independents didn't comprise 10% of the vote. 40 years ago, I certainly would be surprised.
Ted Venatulis, when he ran, it was kind of insignificant who was an independent.
Yeah.
Right? Literally.
And that was 44 years ago. They started motor voter. Okay. So in the past, you had to kind of make a little effort to register to vote. I turned 18. I vote. I registered to vote because I wanted to vote. And I voted. There was an election the year after I was 18. I couldn't wait. Most people, though, takes a while to get to their 30s, get a family and so on. Then they started motor voter, which means you go to the DMV, you're going to register to vote. That's when the independent numbers started clicking up because you had people that were somewhat apathetic about politics. I got to register, and I'll be an independent. I'll be nothing. I'll be neither Democrat or Republican. So that's when the registration in Maryland of independents has been 25% for 15, 20 years. Again, once they started motor voter.
Was that the 90s they did that?
Yeah, I think it was the late 90s. That's just my memory serves. And Don, I know I'm still older than you, but if going back that far, if I need some help, please.
No. I think your analysis is spot on. I find these numbers fascinating, Patrick. And one of the questions that I have for you is, and everyone is trying to answer it, what were you able to discern at all? And maybe you didn't dig down enough this time, and maybe you'll go back and try to, what is it? Is it as simple as COVID and inflation that's dooming the Biden presidency at this point? Or are there other, what is it about Joe Biden that's not resonating with folks?
Well, I think it's performance. I actually asked the question, do you think the Biden administration is competent in running government or not? And again, 55% of Marylanders said yes. But guys, are you competent or not? And 55% in Maryland. So, but anyway, here's what I think is a large part of the problem. First major thing that happened in the Biden administration was the Afghanistan withdrawal in the summer. And we were left with a couple of things. Part of it, the very first thing that came to the fore was they're trying to withdraw Americans, get out by August 31st, which I think most Americans wanted.
Correct.
That's what polling showed. But I think from a sort of a logical competence, why in the world, if withdrawing American citizens is the goal in a determined period of time, the military should be the last to go, but they were the first. So I think a lot of people looked at that and said, that just doesn't seem logical. And I, from my way of thinking, yes, 13 service people died in that. And I think that was part of it. But to me, I think the visual that was left for a lot of people was early on when that plane took off and there were people so desperate to get out of what they perceived Afghanistan was going to become once America left, that you saw the plane, and then at about 1,000 feet, they could cling no longer. And you literally saw human beings dropping. That is, you know, a picture's worth 1,000 words. That image, I think, didn't get a whole lot of coverage. Thank you, because I didn't want to see it a whole lot of times. But I think that it just sort of left a stain. And the same way the visuals back in Vietnam, you know.
I'll say it was the Saigon moment, Patrick. There's no doubt about it. And I think folks in your business, I think when they look at trends, that was the moment where Biden's approval took the most serious hit. If you watch those daily averages and the Gallups and the others, and it hasn't recovered. And then I think you just used a critical word, because I think when you cut to the chase, of all other things that Biden ran on when he ran the campaign from his basement during COVID, was this guy is not only rude, crude, and unattractive, as my mother would say, he would say of Trump, but he's also incompetent. And look, I may not be 35, but you know me. I'm Joe from Delaware, Joe from Scranton, and you know that I'm competent. And people said, you know what? I settle for a little competence. And then when COVID rears its head and inflation rears its head and you can't get legislation passed and you can't get voter rights passed, people say, well, damn, I thought he was competent. Maybe not so much. Is that what you're sensing when you talk?
Yeah, I think in a broad general term, what is at the root of Biden's problems? What I just said and what you just said kind of glom them together. And it's basically just do it. Be competent. I think that's it. And COVID's a tricky little devil because it comes and then it goes and then a new variant comes. But Biden sets himself up to fail when he comes in and says, tomorrow, guys, always comes. When he says, I am going to stamp out COVID. No human being can do that.
And he says in July, yeah, it's Independence Day. Right.
Start being a little more realistic.
Well, you know, Patrick, I said to someone, I was speaking to your old buddy, your old professor, Laszlo Boyd, who's a friend of the show. And Laszlo wanted me to say hello. But we talk about, so often it seems to me, and we're going to jump to Larry Hogan here in a minute. So often it seems politicians make a mistake when they ignore that old maxim, right? Under promise, over deliver, whether it's George Bush standing on the aircraft carrier, other. In other words, under promise and over deliver. And I think it appears to a lot of folks that Biden came out of the gate, misread his victory as a mandate, as opposed to a repudiation of exhaustion, and really over promised and ends up under delivering, which seems to doom elected officials every single time.
No, I agree completely. I think the temptation to overpromise and under-deliver is heightened in the age of the ubiquitous camera. I mean, can you imagine if John F. Kennedy had been assassinated yesterday? We had the Zapruder film back in 63. We'd have 8 million different views. There wouldn't be any question whether it was Oswald alone or not.
Right.
Because we'd know. But I think, you know, it's a lot of pressure when you're a politician these days, because there will be, I don't care, down to the city council level, there will be a camera of some sort, might be a cell phone camera, in front of you 24/7.
And do you remember, take that. Remember when Marilyn Mosby was having dinner this summer down in Harbor East, and someone was upset over this murder trial, and she rode by and screamed, and she flashed the guy the bird. It was caught on cell phone right at that moment.
Exactly. No, exactly. But I still come back. You're absolutely right. Even in today's age, my recommendation is as Nestor likes saying, political advisor would be to stick with that basic, still under promise.
Oh, because guys,
tomorrow always comes.
No, hang on. The last guy got elected on the right side of the ticket by promising everything to everybody. You know, like it, just bullshitting.
And Nestor, he's an outlier.
That works, though.
God, Nestor, that's a great point. And we'll get Patrick's going to have to weigh in on that. That's a great point, Nestor, in that the last guy turned a lot of things on its head. I'm not sure that Trump mystique transfers to any other candidate, though. But to go out there and be bombastic and say crazy things.
They're all trying. I mean, the crazy lady in Georgia and the lunatic out in Colorado that are following the pathway of this. You know, Patrick, I want to ask you, what percentage in your poll of Marylanders believe that the election was rigged? That somehow maybe Trump would have won Maryland.
I've never asked that question. I don't have a clue.
Dude, I guess. You would have a guess. You'd guess that even though Maryland Republicans are probably 30-40%.
But our governor's not selling it. You know what I'm saying? Like in other places, it's part of the rhetoric. Here, it really isn't. Maybe Andy Harris is selling it, but there's not a lot of people selling that ish here. Not even our governor, not even the elected, not David Marks, not Barry Glassman. I've sat with all these people. They're not buying it. They're not repudiating it like maybe they should and say, PU, that's not me, because that's not cool, because apparently 70% of the people voting for them believe anything that Trump says. And that I'm trying to gauge that as to how that affects Schultz or how that affects Andy Harris or how that's going to affect Barry Glassman, who thinks he's going to be the controller.
Well, you asked me, the question was, what percentage of Americans or Marylanders think the election was stolen? I'll use national figures. What do they say? 50% of Republicans think that it was stolen? Well, 50% of Republicans in Maryland is 50% of 30%. So that's 15%.
Not many. Okay, fair. That's good. We're more sane than I think we are. Thank you.
It does give us a great segue, Nestor, to Republican politics in the state. And a couple of things we want to go to Patrick on that. Patrick, I am convinced, listen, lifelong Democrat. I don't dislike Larry Hogan as a person. I don't think he's nearly as effective as obviously Maryland voters do. So I'm an outlier on that. I fully grant at this point, whether it's you or Malia Cromer or someone else, that Larry Hogan is historically popular. And to have a governor in the last year of a two-term gubernatorial span, be it over 70%, I look at that and I say, gentlemen, I tip my hat. Because, remark, what is Larry Hogan's? You have to have thought about it, Patrick. What is his magic sauce that makes this possible? These numbers are off the charts.
Don, remember 86, the eighth year of Harry Hughes's term?
Yes.
You think he had 70% approval?
I'm guessing he was at 29 or 30.
I bet he didn't have 70 people approval in the state of Maryland.
I was going to say, 20, remember this, 29 or 30%.
The sitting governor of Maryland runs for Senate and ends up with 1% or whatever. Anyway, what is the secret sauce? The first poll I did, which was the end of 2015 for Hogan's term, Hogan's in his governor, It was like six. It was almost 70%. And I'm sitting in BAL studio on the radio, and I'm asked the question, why? And I said, guys, I don't have a clue. I mean, he just had cancer last summer. He handled it with some dignity. My sense is that a lot of his appeal is on a personal level, not a political level. So it isn't like I agree with him on 10 issues, therefore I like him. I said, okay, that was my answer 8 years ago. I don't know. I'm not sure my answer today is much different. The one thing I'm convinced of, it's not political. It's not because he's on this Correct. Issue that way or that way. It's a personal thing.
There's it no does other, appear to me. Go ahead, Patrick. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say there's no other explanation why 80% of blacks would approve of the job Larry Hogan's doing other than that, to my way of thinking. So,
well, it is this personal appeal. No, man, that's a strong number that you just gave. And particularly since among the guys and gals who play for my team, we get very frustrated in that we think Hogan has not been very supportive of Baltimore City and has been more about bombast, particularly in terms of crime, than true solutions. But that's not what the guy on the street thinks. And it's not, as you said, whether you're African-American or Hispanic. I was struck by, in your poll, Patrick, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I read this pretty clearly, that he actually now has a stronger approval number among Democrats by just a couple of points than he does among Republicans, right? He was at 70-some percent among Dems, 60 high 60s among Republicans, right?
Yeah. Now, that's true, but that's a dynamic that's been in play for a couple of years. So,
Right. That bipartisan – here's what I think it is, and I'd love to see you and – Malia and others dig into this down the road. I've thought for a long time, and Nestor probably fits into this. He'll react whether he does or not. I know my son does. My daughter does not. A lot of folks that I know really don't care one way or the other about political parties. I obviously do. It was branded into my soul by my mother, a Roosevelt Democrat. And, you know, I bleed Democrat. Many of my friends, many of my relatives do not care. And they think both parties often embarrass themselves by partisan shenanigans. And it seems to me, even though I'm not sure it's always genuine, voters do, that Larry Hogan has convinced folks that he agrees with them and that he's a problem solver, not a partisan hack. And they respond to that on a personal level.
Don, I think you're right. And I think I would, looking at the political parties of today, I would describe both of them at some level as a dysfunctional family. And there are two landmarks to a dysfunctional family. One, there are no adults in the household. And two, which follows from one, the children rule the roost. Mm. And I think I think for a lot of people, I'm following that analogy through, not trying to be judgmental. I think people look at Larry Hogan and say, hey, he looks like an adult to me. And I think, you know, particularly in contrast to so many political figures that are just, I mean, let me talk about Donald Trump for a sec. See, Donald Trump doesn't bother me. His personality, it doesn't bother me. I laugh at it because from the day I first saw him on the stage politically, to my eye, he reminded me of a child desperately trying to win his father's approval. And it's never coming. And I look at some of the behavior. I think some of Biden's behavior down in Atlanta yesterday with that, it was a little over the top. It was almost like a petulant child. And I think we need more adults. That's just sort of my thought.
Well, boy, that's why I love having you on. You touch on so many things. I was in a group yesterday, a large meeting of a number of folks that that really follow this stuff. And the general consensus, going back to President Biden's speech in Atlanta, was that the decibel level really did not serve him well that day. That screaming, the sort of histrionic approach to the issue, understood what he was trying to do.
I think he's been a little more angry since January 6th. I think since that, and I think we're in a new year of Tough Joe. And whether that sells or not, or whether anybody buys it, I think his tone is purposely, he's got a million guys like you behind him, handling him and saying, do it this way, do it this way. You're not popular. Be a tough guy. You look like a wussy in Afghanistan. Be tough. So he's just coming out and playing the play. I mean, no one's more of a politician than him. I mean, I think that. Same way with Kamala Harris, just hiding for a year and then just sort of showing up and being the tough woman this week. I haven't heard from her in 51 weeks. Well, I don't even know where she is.
You've been on the air all day today, and I had some breaks between filming. She had, and people will be writing about it. You'll be seeing the excerpts. She had, for those of us in the business, as you say, who I've been behind the scenes and I've been in front of the camera, she had a really, really rough interview with MSNBC today, Craig Melvin. It's a bad interview, whether you're Kamala Harris fan or not. She was unprepared. She made some misstatements about when tests were going to be sent to the American public. The White House immediately had to roll it back. When Melvin pushed her on it, she got testy. Testy never, ever plays well in front of the camera. I see Patrick shaking his head.
I watch Melvin all the time. I know his wife. You know what I mean? We it's what we watch here. I saw it, and I thought the same thing. I thought, my God, this is the first time they brought you out. Maybe this is why they don't bring you out. But I thought she performed very well on stage during all the debates. And like, I thought she could handle herself. And especially from her background, that she would be better, not better coach, just better on her feet.
No, it was,
you could coach
it was bad
me all day, but at the end of the day, you'd have to be on your feet is what you'd have to be.
If I were a staff member for her right now, I'd be in a fetal position. And again, you don't know. Listen, here's some of the things that people say about the vice president, right? Don't know if it's true, don't know if it's not true. And I always worry that there's an ounce of sexism, more than an ounce, involved in this kind of criticism.
Put race in there too.
But you do, race and sexism. But you do hear that she is not one that's big on preparation, that she tends to say, I'll just trust my people skills. And the reality is, you better be big on preparation. And to go on a national interview when everybody is in the midst of a COVID surge, knowing that people want to know when they're going to be able to get these tests from the federal government and not know when you're going to be able to get them out, it's malpractice. But
well, the other thing that I want to say about this, and Patrick, I want to get you back in on the gubernatorial side, and we'll do that.
I'm enjoying listening to you guys.
No, but this part where they're rehearsed, this part where you sit and drill them in, I would be the worst in the world reading off a script. At some point, I'd say, I'm going to say what I'm going to say, and I feel like these elected officials are at that point. But you put them into a position where they're given the script. This sit down with Melvin, or sit down with anyone, when John Harbaugh sits down, whatever point he sits down, whomever he chooses, including me, he has a level of comfort. They all have a level of comfort that I'm choosing the hour. So she picked the interview. She picked the time. She picked the setting.
Correct.
Listen, if it were me, she wouldn't be picking the topics. I don't know how far they allow their green rooming to go versus what questions are you asking me, because I'm always dubious about that. But when you're unprepared and it's on your turf, it's one thing when you're walking out of an office and you get ambushed and you have to dance. It's different when you call the interview and you're the sitting vice president. It's just bad. It's bad for the Democrats all the way around. And I guess, Patrick, for you, it opens the door on this elective season to say, we're a purple state that leans blue, that's been red, and now who will sit in these seats once we get to your point, what your poll was all about, which, how are we going to vote around here? Wes Moore's raising all of this money. Kelly Schultz is out. Franchot thinks he's going to be governor. All along the way, I'm on mailing list here day after day from everybody. What are are you seeing on the state race here on both sides as we get closer to a primary?
Well, I haven't looked at the either one of the primaries in depth recently, so it's going to be fascinating to see. And quite frankly, I was shocked when Don told me that Westmore has raised $4 million. Good for
4.7, just under 5.
Excuse me, 4.7. I think that's great. However, you don't need the most money in politics. You need enough. And it sounds to me like, to my way of thinking, Wes already has enough. So let's see how it goes. And again, I don't want to, you know, fight past wars or cite things in the past that might have no relevance. But Don, you remember as well as I do, in 1984, John Connally got, he had the equivalent of $170 million, and he got one delegate. So ultimately, I'm a little skeptical of Westmore, to be honest. You said there were three Democratic contenders. I would probably say three. To my way of thinking, one of these people are going to win the Democratic nomination. Tom Perez, Peter Franchot, Rashearn Baker. One of those three is going to win. Rashearn Baker, he didn't get much notice. He got 30% of the vote in 2018.
Several of those are good. Several of those good friends of mine. I mean, I like Tom Perez a lot. I obviously am close with Rashearn, going back many, many years when he was a county executive in Prince George's. Really good people.
About money, Westmore's going to win, right? I mean, Don, the money, right?
Well, money matters, as Patrick said. You got to have enough. That's always been Rashearn's issue. He struggles to have enough. This time he's talking about trying to do public financing. We'll see if that works out. Listen, full disclosure, I've been supported. Once it was clear that Johnny wasn't going to run, and obviously if Johnny O had run, I'd have been working 24/7 to elect Johnny as governor, because that's how fond I am of him. But once he didn't run, it was easy for me to get behind and work hard for Wes. I think Wes is potentially a transformational candidate for the state of Maryland. I think when the dust settles, he will be the last man standing. And it gets us, Patrick, to some in analyzing your poll, thought there might be a kernel of good news in there for Kelly Schultz. And I'm going to get to the Kelly and Dan Cox dust up on the Republican side. And I'm sure you will be pulling that down the road.
Wait, Don, why would you say that Westmore is going to win because he has the most money? Or, I mean, Patrick, he's polling at 3 or 4. Nobody knows who Wes is yet, right?
I think it's growing. And I think that what all the polls, and Patrick knows this part because he's done these kinds of polls for folks. One of the things is when what they found out is that when they shared Wes's narrative, you took names out of it and you shared narrative and backstory, Wes's numbers go way up. That's why the resources to go forward matter, is that when folks begin to know Wes more, beyond the folks who already know him through his writings and his work at Robin Hood and the book The Other Wes Moore and his cable commentary, when folks see his resume, from Rhodes Scholar to jumping out of airplanes in Afghanistan to being a leader of men and women in the military, it resonates with folks. So I'm pretty confident. I'm pretty confident when the dust clears, he will be there. But some of the analyses, Patrick, of your work from this past week, thought there was a silver lining for Kelly Schultz. And it's my favorite number that every pollster ever does. It's the one I always go to. It's the one that Jim Smith and Kevin Kamenetz and all jump right away. Right track, wrong track, right? And whenever we had a right track number for Smith and Kamenetz, they were often in the 60s, we'd say, we're good to go. Don't have to worry about anything else. If we got a right track number in the 60s, we're going to win again. You had Maryland right track at 57. Is that good news for someone who wants to say we're doing good things under Larry Hogan? Let's not change horses here in the middle of the race.
Here's the problem, Don. The right direction, wrong direction. The right direction of 57% in the state of Maryland is founded, grounded in the 70% of Democrats that say it's going in the right direction.
Got it.
The problem for Kelly is that within Republicans, I don't want to overstate it and say it's 2-1, but it's close. Among Republicans, 2-1, they say wrong track as opposed to right direction.
Interesting. Well, then, what do you say then, Patrick? You, I know you haven't polled it, and we're going to give you – we'll let you start with that caveat. But my gut tells me that our good buddy Michael Steele passed on this race because he wasn't sure that a Republican like him who had worked with the Lincoln Project could get past a Dan Cox in a Republican primary. Do you think the threat of a Dan Cox slash Donald Trump Republican is real in the state of Maryland, or do you still think Kelly Schultz is the one to beat?
I think Michael Steele made the right decision not running. I think he would have gotten pounded in a Republican primary. I think Kelly is going to have a very difficult time winding her way through a Republican primary. Hey, guys, Republican primary voters are the same in Maryland as they are in California, in Texas, in Florida. A Republican primary voter is a Republican primary. A Republican primary voter in Garrett County, Maryland, is no different than a Republican primary voter in the city of Baltimore. The only difference is there are only three in the city of Baltimore.
But well, describe them, Patrick, for our listeners. Who, if you were to write a primer on this for someone, let's say Nestor said to you, hey, Patrick, send me a couple of paragraphs on who makes up a Republican primary.
By the way, Patrick, just since the last time you and I got together, I've been in every county in the state having crab cakes, driving around in summer, seeing Confederate flags on the Eastern Shore, seeing Confederate flags out in Garrett County, seeing Trump, seeing F. Biden, seeing Brandon, all like I've been out. I think I'm living in a city hanging out with Mueller and hanging out with the libs all day. But I'll tell you what, I mean, there is a wide swath. This is a very large state, and you have to cross some bridges to find some of these places, right?
Right.
So who are those voters? Who are Republican? What do they care about?
They care about with Republican. I'm not, I don't know enough. I don't care to, but I, any more than I care what a Democrat thinks. But let
but
me tell you.
But you told them. But
I do. I do.
I'm going to push back on that.
No, that's fine. Let me frame it. 90% of Democratic primary voters strongly love Barack Obama. 90% of Republican primary voters strongly love Donald Trump. You got a deal. So that's the dynamic you're dealing. That's the dynamic. Kelly's. Everybody talks about Glenn Youngkin showed the way for a Republican to deal with the Trump issue. No, that was a general election. He didn't have to deal with Trump in a primary. They have conventions there. He was nominated and done. Any Republican in this state running in a primary on June 28th at some level is going to have to deal with the influence of Donald Trump. And my suspicion is that Dan Cox is going to try to make, so, you know, and how he works it in, that's going to be up to him, is going to try to make Trump an issue. How can a guy that's been out of office for 2 years, who's running around still talking about the election in 2020, how can he have an influence? Well, he will. And I think Kelly's going to have to figure out a way to kind of, as any Republican is.
Well, what a great point to wrap this up, Patrick. And we hope
and
you'll come back.
And somehow Larry Hogan would still get 72% of the vote, right?
Like, well, literally. but listen to what Patrick's saying. He just really crystallized.
Prove Lindsey Graham's point. Which well, is, if yeah, you're not with Trump, you won't win. That's the common perception, even here.
He crystallized that for me because it's hard for me to imagine, Patrick. I hadn't gotten that far yet, but boy, you brought it home. Hard for me to imagine with his thin skin and, as you said, the petulant child in the room that Donald Trump is, who hates, obviously, Larry Hogan. If he views Kelly Schultz as heir apparent to Larry Hogan, it's hard for me to believe that Trump won't come in and try to tip the scales and say Dan Cox is my guy, right? And that's what you're saying Youngkin didn't have to deal with.
He didn't have to deal, but you make a good point. I think Trump's already endorsed Cox, but would he on a personal level take offense that Larry Hogan didn't vote for him in either time and hop on a plane? Landed at Friendship. I still call BWI Friendship Airport. and make a little bus tour around the state, reminding Republican primary voters who the real Republican is, as he's pointing to Dan Cox. I don't know. But like you just said,
Kim Classic would get on the front of that bus and wave to everybody, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, here's what I'm going to do. If that's true, then I'm going to gather all my Democratic friends. We're going to go out to my favorite statue, St. Ignatius, out there at Loyola High School. When I go out and always, when I want something real bad, I go out and talk to St. Ignatius. I'll be saying, let Donald Trump campaign for Dan Cox. Let Donald Trump campaign for Dan Cox, be a Democratic dream come true. Nestor, do we get it straight from the horse's mouth or what?
We do. Patrick, we really appreciate you coming on, man, as always, and shooting it straight and come on a little bit more often. When's your next poll coming out, man?
At this point, I don't know. It'll be soon. I mean, we don't have much time before the election, guys. It isn't done. It's not like the old days when the primary was in September. Oh.
Dude, listen to me, Patrick. I'm going to tell you what I tell Malia, what I tell Mueller, all of them. You call this phone and you want some information from me. If you get it, I'm lying to you. I'm just going to tell you right now, straight out. Because that's just, I don't tell anybody where I'm voting. You know
what
I mean?
They call enough people. They don't need you. Guys, mark it down. It is January the 13th, 2022. I know you were both skeptical, but when the dust settles, it will be Wes Moore representing the Democrats, and hopefully Dan Cox representing the Republicans.
So you're pulling for Cox on the you're pulling for lunacy on the other side. That's what you're doing.
Oh my goodness! I told you I'm going to make a trip out to see St. Ignatius Loyola and say, "All right, now let's go." I want them to put Trump on this trip that Patrick talked about, and Patrick had the point. See, he's a pollster. He knows the message point. All Trump has to say to turn that primary is there's one true Trump Republican in this race, and that's Dan Cox. And at that point, it's over.
Yeah, it might be. But guys, guys, you said come back. Dudes, I will come back as often. I'll come every day for the next 6 months.
Well, I like the fact that you have your microphone working now and your hair.
Absolutely.
You look good.
Come back
anytime you want. We got to get a crab cake together. Hey, first, appreciate you. Patrick Gonzalez joining us here, doing the research, doing the polling. Don Mueller doing sometimes some rhetoric, but most of the time he's staying on point and keeping me in line. Former Baltimore County executive and my guidance counselor. We're going to be getting back out to Fadley's. I've been wearing the Fadley shirt today. A little mac and cheese, delicious crab cake, maybe two, maybe even a bowl of soup down at Lexington Market. We're hoping to get through this Omicron thing, get the mask off, get back to Nacho Mamas, get back to Costas, our friends at State Fair and Beaumont, and El Guapo. I need a margarita. All presented by our friends at Maryland Lottery. We're letting ourselves play on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Big appreciation. Happy New Year. We're back to arguing about politics. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.